I've been for a week now at the Fields Institute, and this has been a very pleasant stay, and I would like to also thank for the invitation to the Institute. So I guess that's right. I will also talk about some L1-3rd algorithm. And first of all, okay, I think we don't need this anymore. We have this sub-exponentiality function here. And so the motivation is the same as in the last talk. We have these L1-3rd algorithms for integer factorization as well as for this logarithm problem in finite fields. And so this statement here, this is still correct. Even after, it was correct before the last talk, or before this work was done. It was correct after the last talk. It's also correct after my talk. So if you consider the body of this the problem as such, to find discrete logarithms in these groups, for curves of high genus, say, fix the fields, then you only have an L1/2 algorithm. But anyway, one can ask for special classes, of course, where one has better algorithms. And so my starting point is really this result, which you know about, at least I think most of you know about. So this was obtained by me like 1.5 years ago, and I presented this to the last ECC in Copenhagen, and I presented this also at ENDS. So so basically what is this saying? This says this is an asymptotic result where you fix something, and then you let the Q go to infinity, and what you fix is not the genus. And so that's interesting. You fix just the degree of an equation you give yourself an equation which defines a curve, okay? And the equation can define a curve which is singular, but you consider this logarithm problem in the non-singular curve associated to this, and then you get a running time which only depends, well, as a parameter on the degree, and then you have some Q as well there, of course. And now, to give you a little bit of history, Andreas mentioned this already. So I told this Andreas and Pierrick long ago, say March, 1.5 years ago, and they said, yeah, actually we've been trying something like that, something similar, and they briefly outlined the results they obtained, and then I heard about it again, and I couldn't really believe it, and then I thought, okay, if this is true, then definitely this is true. You get an L1-3rd algorithm if you consider non-singular plane curves. So these are curves where you have a polynomial, homogeneous polynomial in three variables, and the polynomial as such defines a non-singular curve. Why is this? Because then you have a very nice relation between the degree and the genus, and the degree is very low in comparison to the genus, because the genus is roughly the degree squared over 2. And then, okay, I've started thinking about this, and one night I think I got it. And, well, that's it. And, well, then we had a very nice meeting by after ANT, which is part of European Project ECRIPT, and we both presented our results to each other, and then we both had this strange epsilon. We both didn't have L1-3rd. We both had L1-3rd plus epsilon. But then I thought, okay, my situation actually is much nicer than the other situation, so I'm going to remove the epsilon. And one particular reason why the stay here at the Fields Institute was so pleasant is because I could remove the epsilon. And I did this last week. I did not do this yesterday. And so I moved the epsilon here, but that's not a problem, okay? So that's the second constant. That's a completely different issue, okay? And anyway, maybe I can remove this as well and have a smaller of one here as well. So if you see this result, okay, you consider any kind of family of non-singular plane curves, and you have some lower bound on the genus. This is essentially the same as in the last talk. And then here you have this L1-3rd, and here you have some strange constant. And what's that constant? A lot of people know this. Actually, a lot of people know this much better than I do, actually, than I did, because this is exactly the constant you obtain in the number field sieve, in the general number field sieve. So I was like, wow. I just made a computation, and wow, I get the same constant. I don't know. I'm still a little bit wondering why that is, but maybe there's some kind of explanation. Okay, you know about index calculus now. And, okay, so this is the setup. You have some smoothness bound. You have the factor base. You've seen that. And then you want to generate relations between the factor base elements and the inputs and solve the squid level problem and the linear algebra. And I'm going to proceed in a two-step process, just like Andreas did in the last talk. And I'm going to make this a little bit more rigorous because I really want to derive this result. So this means I'm not going to talk about like something like g to the 1/3. I'm like more talking about logarithm of and with all constants. Okay, so just maybe as a side remark, this is not really important at all to get 1/3, but this is anyway nice to have it, and I would like to mention it. There's this idea by Florian Hess. We now have very fast point counting algorithms in any way if the genus is large. And the running time in any way, if the genus is large or not, is polynomial in the genus and in log Q. That's anyway what is claimed. There isn't really a real citation for this, I think, but anyway, this is claimed by people who know this. And, if the genus is large, that's not a problem. That's definitely correct. And this means you can do... you can first of all perform computation where you compute the L polynomial. That means you can determine in particular the number of elements in the class group, and then you can do modular computation in the linear algebra, and in particular also because the matrix is sparse, you can do sparse linear algebra. So this saves something. Okay, but that's just a recital remark, but I wanted to make it anyway. Okay, that's the setting here. You have this polynomial in three variables. This has a certain degree, which I call D. And you have this relation between the genus and the degree. And note again, I assume this polynomial defines as such a non-singular curve. Okay? Otherwise, it's not correct. And this number here, D, which is the degree, this is equal to the number of intersection points of the curve with a line. And that's the usual definition of a degree. That's the usual general definition of degree. And anyway, it's also equal to the degree of this polynomial. Okay. And so here is just, the brief, the general idea of my last algorithm. So this is the algorithm for curves over large fields. So that's really very easy. You fix this divisor D infinity, which is given by an intersection. You do some other intersection with some other line, and then you have this equivalence. This is a linear equivalence. That's called linear equivalence. And that means that these two divisors are related by a function. So there's a function which has this as a pole and this as a zero. So I should have said the other way around. This as a zero and this as a pole. So this means, okay, both these divisors are defined by intersection, and these intersecting curves are defined by polynomials, and you just put the one polynomial on top and the other one on the bottom, and that's it. And so this means you have this relation in the class group. And by the way, the term linear equivalence comes from this fact. So that's why linear equivalence is called linear equivalence. And so what about high genus? So, okay, I have to do something more. So I have to increase the search space. One has to say it really. And so I intersect the curve with lines and then some higher object things, like quadrics, cubics, and quartics, and so on. And I would like to do some, present this now in terms of usual algebraic geometry. This like this is very classical. This terminology is like 120 years old, and is very convenient in this setting here. So, you consider polynomials of a certain degree, which is called T. Okay, and then you intersect the algebraic object, for example, line or quadric or whatever, with the curve, and this gives you an intersection divisor, and I call it like this, okay? This is the notation. And all these objects together, they form what is called a so-called linear system. And you also have this object here, which is the so-called complete linear system, which contains all divisors which are linearly equivalent to this divisor, so and effective. So these all effective divisors, which are linearly equivalent to the given divisor. And another way of writing this is as follows. Okay, so this divisor is just the same as this divisor, and to say that this is positive, you can put this on the other side, and this is the same as saying that this function is somehow bounded from below by this divisor. So that means somehow the poles of this function are bounded, sometimes also the zeros, but you should think of it like poles. And, well, they're bounded from below, poles or zeros. And you see that these functions, they lie in some vector space, and this is by a theorem, this is a finite dimensional vector space, this is called an L space or Riemann-Roch space, and in particular this means that this space here is a projective space, this is the space of this function, and the projective, well, the projective space associated to this linear space. And you can ask what is dimension, okay? And why do I want to know what is this dimension? Because I want to know how many relations do I get. So I ask what is its dimension, okay? And the result is that every polynomial I consider here defines another divisor. I think maybe this result is sometimes taken as granted, and maybe it was also in the last talk. I think so, actually, in fact. This is often taken as granted, but I'm going to prove it. This is the only thing I'm going to prove in this talk. And so if T, which is the degree of what I intersect with, is smaller than defining equation, then the dimension of this complete linear system, this is the dimension of all of the space of all polynomials in three variables of degree t, and then this is the vector space, and then minus 1 because it's projective. Okay, and so I'm going to do the proof now. So here's the proof. This is actually not so difficult. The point is just you have to pass from some projective space to some vector space, and the problem is just really to get the setting right. Okay, so here you have the immersion of the curve into projective 2 space, and you have some defining ideal, and then you have some kind of exact sequence, which is at least intuitively maybe not so difficult. It means here you have polynomials of degree t, okay, and here you have the defining ideal and the degree t part. And here, this is some kind of restriction homomorphism onto some objects which live on this curve. And this can be expressed with something which comes from algebraic geometry. We actually don't really need that too much. And the point is really just that this restriction homomorphism in the case we're considering is injective. Okay? And why is that? That's just because in the degrees we are considering, this ideal is actually zero because the degrees we are considering are smaller than the defining polynomial. Okay, to give it a little bit more notation. So this is the set of global sections of this sheaf here, this linear system that consists exactly of the divisors associated to this to the divisors of these elements in the in this vector space, and the same here for this other linear system, and that's the proof. Okay. Then let's recall again the sub-exponentiality function. Okay, you've seen that. And it is very convenient to take this function with respect, the logarithm with respect to q, and what you obtain then is this here. So this, if you put this in the exponent, you get this sub-exponentiality function again. Okay, why is this? Because if you do this calculation and you look at the exponents, you have some log q here, and then this somehow cancels, and then you have some log q to the alpha, Okay, and okay, so log Q times G, this is what you have here then, and this here is what you have here. Okay, so that's convenient. And I would like to say, I would like, really like to thank Andreas Enger for pointing all this and a couple of other estimates which follow out to me. In particular, this result, which was obtained by Florian Hess, essentially obtained by Florian Hess. And this is the precise version of what Andreas just told you, okay? So here, this was something like this in the previous talk. This alpha was something like 2 over 3. This beta was something like 1 over 3, for example, say. And then we consider a certain, say, probability. Namely, we consider the number of effective divisors of degree n, which are m smooth, and we consider, well, some given some relations between m and n, which come from this alpha and beta and some other constants. Okay, so for example, I say it again: this is one, this is 2/3, and this is 1/3. Okay, and so okay, these are the degrees. To recall again, this is about g to the alpha. This is about g to the beta. One application of this is, for example, g to the 2/3 and g to the 1/3. Okay, so and that's what Andreas Enger just talked about. And so somehow this number of divisors divided by this is some kind of probability. And so here, for example, if you plug in here 2/3, 1/3, and you get 1/3, and that's exactly what we just used in the last talk. And here is a very important heuristic result, which says you that at least part of my algorithm is working. So you put this constant in, okay, and then you consider the smoothness bound exactly this, 1/3, C, and then, so this is how far you go up in the intersection, yeah? You intersect with these polynomials which are used for intersection. This is the degree of these polynomials, okay, and then you consider this linear system, and then the S smooth divisors in this linear system, they generate this relation lattice of the factor base. And that's more or less one of two main results of this talk. Well, it's of course only heuristic, but and it means you have this dimension of this linear system. Okay, so what is it? Remember, this was t plus 2 over 2, so this is about t square over 2. So, and I have here some square root, and if I square this, then, okay, I get somehow this, and this 4, I have to divide by 2. This is just the constant which is in front. So this 4, if I divide 4 by 2, I get 2. And so this is the dimension, and so this is the dimension of the search. So this is the dimension of the search space, and then the relation collection, the running time of this is q to this dimension. Okay, so this is q to this business. So this is the running time of the relation generation, which is this thing here, and the running time for the linear algebra. This is given by the number of elements in the factor base. This is q to this, and then square. And this means that this C also becomes a 2C. And then you see these two numbers are essentially the same. So I have balanced the relation generation and the linear algebra. And so this means that the result is nice. The only thing you have to really check is that this constant here is correct. And the following computation, I really like it. So I'm going to present it, even though it's a little bit difficult. So I make some kind of heuristic assumption. I guess this can be reformulated in other ways as well. So essentially, the probability that a uniformly chosen divisor in this linear system is S smooth is equal to the probability that a uniformly chosen divisor of the same degree, effective divisor of the same degree, is S smooth. Okay, so that's a heuristic assumption. That's Andreas Enger also made more or less the same assumption. Actually, I think everybody who studies that kind of algorithms would make that assumption. And I already considered the dimension of this. Recall this was t plus 2 over 2. And so the degree is really important. And so this is so nice that I'm actually going to present it, even though it's just a couple of equalities. So this is t times d. And so this was essentially the definition of t, and this is d. Okay. So this is how the genus and the degree is related. So recall that the genus is about d squared over 2. So if you reformulate it, this is the degree. And okay, you can put this in front, and you can put this 2 in front. So this is what it is, what is in front. And then here you have something g to the 1/3 and the square root of this. So this is g to the 1/6. And here you have the rest of this thing here. And then here you have this. And okay, now in the moment I just put this in front, and then I'm going to also put this 2 in front. And now what is really nice, and this is somehow for me the magic of this L function, is that 1/6 plus 1/2 is exactly 2/3. Well, that's okay, but then here I get 2/3, and here I get 1/3. So I can again rewrite this with this small L. So I guess for everybody who is studying number theory, I'm not doing this, he must have seen a similar calculation, I assume, but I have not. And I was really surprised at this. And okay. And then okay. So, let's recall. So this was the degree. Okay. And then I just apply this general probability result by Hess I mentioned at the beginning. Yeah. And then I had something associated with 2/3. I wanted to have something smooth associated with L/3. And here, this is the second constant I just obtained. And then it comes in the numerator. And then the denominator comes some other constant, which comes from the smoothness bound. And here you got a third. This is the same as this. And then you got small one of one. And and then this is the number of relations over the factor base. This is the probability times the number of all relations, all devices in this linear system. And I guess what I just do here is this comes here from this dimension. And and what I want to check is that this number is large enough such that I have enough relations. And then I make another heuristic assumption, namely something about the linear independence of these relations. I think this was also implicitly made in the last talk. So anyway, I want to check that the number is correct, and I do it. And that's the claim. And okay, you have some kind of computation. Okay, this, you won't have this number as you can see. And let's, for example, put epsilon equal to 0, and then you just want to check that. Without the epsilon, without the small of 1, you want to check that this number and this number is equal, and you can do it by just, I guess, putting this on this side and putting this on this side. You get some kind of equality like this. Okay, then you raise this here, and then you get this. You get exactly what you want. And something is wrong, right? I guess I made a mistake, and because this is in the wrong order. Okay, so for that, I guess I should have reversed the 9 and the 8. Okay. Oh, that was a big shock. I don't get the same running time as number 50, but I actually get the same running time because there's a misprint. And so now the difficult part really was to relate the input elements to the factor base. And so the first step is kind of obvious. That's what Andreas Enger also told you. you do some initial splitting, okay, you fix some base divisor of degree G, you compute some alpha and beta, and you compute some divisor of degree G which represents this. You can do this by your Hausdorff. It's fastest polynomial time, it's easy. And you do this until this is L 2/3, C smooth. This will be a small L. And the time needed for this is something associated with L, L 1/3, and it turns out that because of the second constant, it's actually negligible. Okay, but then how do you go on? And, well, that's the result I obtained in this one night, and I see now that Andreas Engel essentially just also presented that in his talk, I guess. That's the improvement from yesterday. I'm not so sure. You have this smoothing procedure. You have a divisor of degree D given, where you have something which is essentially G to the alpha smooth, and you apply some kind of procedure, which I will describe in a moment, and you get some kind of relation where these things, they all have degree essentially bounded by G to the alpha over 2 plus 1 over 6. And, well, that's exactly the same as in the last talk. And the heuristic running time is, again, L 1/3, comma C, plus some another small epsilon, which also converges against 0 if you want. Okay. And how this is applied was already explained in the last talk. You get some kind of tree with this. And, okay, so the first application, for example, say after the initial smoothing, you have something which is essentially G to the 2/3 smooth, and you apply this procedure, and then you have something which is essentially G to the 1/2 smooth. Okay, and then you go on and go on and go on again. For example, say we have, this in initially, okay, which is essentially G to the 2/3 smooth, then how do you go on? You have this splitting here, and then to each of these di in this splitting, you apply this procedure again, and you obtain something which is more smooth, and you apply it again, and you apply it again, you get some kind of tree, so you can consider the degree of these divisors in these rows here, and this is given here by this recursive function, recursively defined series, which can be explicitly defined by 1/3 plus 2/3 times 1 over 2 to the n minus 1. And, okay. And again, what we want is that essentially this height of the tree is polynomial, and this width of the tree, this is not a problem then, because as Andreas explained to you, if something is already bounded by G and you want to split it, then you can have at most G splitting, so that's not a problem. So you can do that. And I'm still at the application of the smoothing procedure, in case I lost you. I'm going to explain to you the procedure later. And, essentially I stop after logarithmically many tries. And then what are the degrees? Okay, this is exactly this here, because that was the definition. And, if you look at this, this is actually very small here. This 1 over G is actually very small. It is... You can always confuse yourself with this, but it is something which appears in a certain constant, and it appears in an exponent, this is then in this small of one. So this term here, this comes from this. Because essentially what you do here, you have something g to the power of this, okay, and then you can put the g in the exponent. This is log g over g in the exponent. Okay. And now I'm going to explain to you the smoothing procedure. This is I also like to explain this in terms of these linear systems. You are given some kind of effective divisor of the appropriate degree, which is about g to the alpha, okay? And, for example, alpha is 2/3. And then you set yourself, okay, so this essentially defines how large your search space has to be, okay? So the degree of these polynomials with which you intersect, and you consider this linear system. What is it? So it is exactly given by the polynomials which have roots in D. Okay, so that's this linear system. And what you want to know is if this system is a linear system, has large enough dimension and small enough degree. And essentially, this is the result here is this is very similar to what I said initially. Yeah. And what happens if you have a divisor? If you have found a divisor in this linear system, okay, then you have a divisor which is linear equivalent to this divisor, okay, and this means you have a certain divisor d prime plus which has a property this divisor plus this original divisor is linear equivalent to a certain multiple times d infinity, and that's what you want. And okay, we want to have something which is a little bit more smooth than we started with. And okay, we have a certain dimension, which is again this t over 2 plus 2 over 2, and which comes from here. And then we have this degree here, and we have an inequality at this time. And you can work it out, and essentially, well, this is associated with some kind of alpha, and this was also associated with some kind of alpha to start with. Why? Where does this come from? Okay, so this is a square here, and here you have a root. So. So this is how you obtain this term, and this term you have by definition. And you can also work out the degree, so the computation is exactly similar as I said before. And you see that the degree is alpha over 2 plus a half, so this is the same result as in Andreas Inge's talk. Also, and what is the difference between this procedure now and the initial search for a relation? The difference is just really here. Before I had 2C and now I have just C. And before I wanted to have C smooth relations and now I just want to have one. And that works out. And that's why this is working. And you obtain this heuristic result that you obtain at least one relation by considering this linear system. So, by considering this linear system, you obtain at least L1/3, comma, and a constant many relations. So at least. So this means you, in particular, you obtain at least one, and that's what you want. Okay. Well, in case I lost you completely, that's the algorithm. So we have this p-adic point counting at the beginning. That's just to ensure that the linear algebra is a little bit faster. So this means that we can lower this constant a bit here, but that's not important for the L1/3. And then we have this bound here on the factor base, which is nice because it ensures that we get the same running time as the number field sieve. And then we generate these relations by intersecting the curve with other curves, which are given by these homogeneous polynomials. And here you have the degree, which you have to consider. Okay, here you have essentially a square root of this. Okay, and why is this? Because I recall again the dimension of this linear system is essentially this square over 2. And okay, so that's more or less the easy part, maybe, and then you have to relate the input elements to the factor base, and for this you have to have the smoothing procedure. And to recall this again, you do some initial splitting until you have something which is essentially g to 2/3 smooth. Then you do something to get something more smooth, namely you have some kind of procedure which every time you have something of the form g to the of the degree g to the alpha, it outputs you something linear equivalent where the terms are of degree g to the alpha over 2 plus 1 over 6. And then you do the linear algebra. Okay. And I would also like to say what happens if now I vary the degree. And so I can go as far as 3 over 4. And I still obtain something interesting. Yeah. And the result is that I always obtain the running time is always L, and then 2 over 3 times the degree. And why did I put this bound here? Because at this point, I obtain L a half. And then it's not interesting anymore. So I guess Andreas Enger's empiric Gudwies curves are, here you have the beta equal 2 over 3, and then I get 4 over 9, which is, of course, not as good. But that was not to be expected, because they considered an asymmetric situation, and I consider everything from a symmetric point of view, so it was not to be expected that one gets the same running time. Okay, I would like to thank you for that. That's the thing. What? But there are not. There are only two D's, huh? That's fine, huh? So if I put I made a mistake. Okay, this is not correct. What I want to say is correct. I don't want to have the D in there. I guess maybe I want to have the beta in there. I want to have the beta in there. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry for that. Yeah. So yeah. I want to have the beta in there. Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah. It's always the point is always that the degree also appears in the exponent, but you always have to be careful with the exponent because somehow you have double exponents. You can make a lot of mistakes with that.
So when you sort of look at the case that you've handled versus the case that Andreas has done, right? So you've done a case where you looked at the smoothly projected curve, right?
Yeah.
But you actually do have this perfect balancing, and Andreas has done the one where you actually. If I look at the smooth projective model of that, I get a big singularity out of infinity.
Yeah.
And that forces the unbalancing.
Yeah. But actually, he did the other case as well, I guess, at least for the relation generation. I guess what you said about the relation generation is exactly what I said about the relation generation as well as equal, I would say.
I mean, so I guess my question would be, is there some reason to believe that you'd be able to get a whole class of curves?
Yeah, I think so. I think you can do some interpolation and I guess you can take his results and, yeah, something. I guess something like following should be true. If you have something like this is now, Andreas Enger likes to write things in inhomogeneous form, and I like to write it in homogeneous form. But in this for this presentation, to answer this. Questions maybe more appropriate to write in homogeneous form. So so essentially what we're looking at is this, okay? You have some bound on X and you have some bound on Y. And so what do you want? I guess what you want is something like this, huh? That, for example, would I claim that this gives you an and alpha and beta are in between one third and two third. This would give you an L one third algorithm, I claim. That seems to be pretty obvious to me. And then you can also ask, okay, what's the condition that I get something better than a half? And well, you can probably also answer that question. But I would like to say something else in the same direction. I would like to say what you don't obtain, because I think that message is maybe more important. So first of all, for example, the class of curves I really consider, the non-singular plane curves, this class, the chances, if you give me a curve that this is in this class, is zero. I mean, it's not, I mean, you know, I mean, there isn't even for every genus a curve in this class. I mean, that's what I say, because the genus grows quadratically, so it cannot be. Okay, I could maybe enlarge the class a little bit so that at least for every genus you would have a curve in that class, and you would maybe, even with all constants, obtain the same result. But anyway, then the density would be zero. And also, if you consider all classes, of course, we obtain, and maybe even all extensions, the density asymptotically is always zero. And I think I can make this a little bit precise by saying that at least what you have to have are two functions of relatively small degree, which we call x and y here, and you can prove that on a generic curve these functions just don't exist. And that means the probability is forced to be essentially zero. Oh, this is really... You can do it with a resultant, for example, no? And, yeah. So I guess it's polynomial time. So anyway, I don't worry about it. It's polynomial time, really. There's nothing to worry about, really.
Any other questions?